And none of the...
But there's two other properties beyond it.
There are no residential properties that abut this property. And...
Right.
And then no other property in the industrial park that's developed now is shielded from view from any other property, so... So...
Is, what about, would there ever be any odor?
All the odors on the ocean.
That's a different standard, you'll come to that.
Okay, well, I just, it just is any relevant detrimental effect, so if it...
This is a, I don't know if that... This is a visual impact standard. Number two is visual impact. And number three, there's no electromagnetic fields that are generated by this property or development. Artificial lighting, that's applicable because this will have artificial lighting. Noise to be heard outside of the building?
Well, there would be the coolers.
The compressor running.
Yep, the hum.
Trucks in and out.
But it's a commercial zone.
But it is an industrial park, so...
But you want to find it applicable because this project will generate noise, so you need to find that it's going to be appropriate level of noise for the locality.
The muscles are not too noisy by the time you get them there.
So the only thing would be trucks coming in and out?
And the compressors.
How noisy are the compressors? They can't be.
It's just a hum. Like, I actually have one next to my house for my small oyster building, and I can't hear it inside the house.
It's for an outside refrigeration.
Yeah, no, I just didn't think of it.
Pretty size, probably.
Yeah.
I think there's one at that lobster building that went in a year or two ago. Yeah.
But for the most part, your trucks would be coming in during the day.
That's right.
Night and out. Yeah.
I mean, everybody's got trucks coming in now.
Yep. In industrial park, the ordinance does not set limitations on the hours of operation for any business. But there's an exception. If you're a commercial hauler and you're emptying dumpsters, our land use ordinance prohibits, actually it's the building ordinance, it prohibits that activity between 10 p.m. and 7 a.m. on the day. But other commercial activities are not regulated as to the hours of operation. The next one, Brian, is where you deal with nuisance orders.
Yeah, I just didn't see that.
So the key is nuisance odor. Is there a nuisance odor, a risk of nuisance odors from this project? And you might find that won't be the case.
I guess we're going to find out.
If all goes well, it wouldn't be the case. You know, I just wonder about some of the storage of the gear.
Right.
That might have a little bit of a...
Well, we have what we call pressure washers. We have these 2,500 square foot nets that we put around to keep the ducts away. But we have two boats, and each one has a pressure washer. So we clean those before we bring them back, and there's no odor.
Okay.
But we might have them to mend. Yeah. And then the muscle ropes themselves are also dry. So, I also have those near my house, and it's not this year.
So basically, we're going to say that's been mitigated by cleaning off-site?
Sure.
I mean, it's obviously applicable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have any of the muscles come in dead that need to be removed and disposed of?
Well, we do that all on the boat.
You do?
So the bins are actually going to tip right in the bagging machine, and everything's already inspected. We may have, at the end of the day, a few muscles that fall on the floor or something, but we'll have a dumpster.
So the dumpster might be the most odorous.
What, to put in the plastic bags?
Yeah.
Yeah, a bag, probably. We have a kind of a similar situation just down the street from that that lot with a Water Wells 2, which they process shrimp. Mm-hmm. And some of their waste gets left outside there.
It's a great honor.
Yeah, on hot summer days. So.
How about the crab place?
Oh, that's what I meant.
That's crab.
Not shrimp.
Crab lobster.
Number seven?
Nothing.
No solar panels nearby.
No smoke or dust.
You can put them on. You can put them on the roof. Do you want to?
Well, no, that this standard, Ed, has to do with the project interfering with solar gains on the budding properties.
Is there going to be any smoke or dust? Or what kind of heat?
It's going to be propane.
Propane?
Mm-hmm. Propane heat.
Space heaters.
Everything pretty wet to bring it in. They're also already processed, so I don't know.
Yeah.
That one's probably not applicable, really.
No.
Do you have to keep it heated during the times that you're not there?
Say that again, George.
Sorry.
Well, we want to keep it heated to the point where the pipes would freeze.
I just wondered if you...
Like 45 degrees or something.
Yeah, shut her down.
Yeah, we'll be keeping the cooler at like 35.
Yeah.
So it'll be continually cool.
What did you say, George? I'm sorry.
I was thinking 8 probably wouldn't be applicable.
Correct, yeah.
Hmm. Everybody agrees?
Yep. 9, probably not.
9.
No.
Unless you got a boombox buried. So we got 1, 3, 1, 4, 5, 6 that we would figure is applicable.
That's right? What I had, yep.
Everybody agree?
Yep.
On to public safety standards.
I don't think this use opposes any detrimental effects that might present a risk of to the quantity or quality of drinking water supply. Quantity, maybe if they were drawing a tremendous amount of water in the processing of the mussels, but I don't think that's the case.
And the backflow preventers prevent anything in the building from going back into the system anyway?
No. Those are pretty normal.
Right, but it's just...
There's a booster pump station at the down at the corner on 46. Mm-hmm. You still going to need a booster pump?
I think all lots do, don't they? They're all... the water pressure is boosted at that station.
Yeah, I think the only suggestion was the hydromatic tank or pressure tank in the building, which would require any mechanical energy to give them a little means of softening the draw. So main in the road, pretty adequate supply.
So there really isn't, I don't think there's any relevant detrimental effect in the water supply, so that would be not applicable. And the same on the next one, too. There's no relevant detrimental effect to energy supply services.
Yeah, there's no energy up there anywhere.
But unless they have a high energy need, and I don't think they do, there's no high energy need. So that eliminates the relevancy of that potential detrimental effect. They're not in the ballgame. Public safety services.
You aren't running anything more than 240 volts?
No, I think that the interest is to have three phase, but it's not a large number of motors.
No. Compressor's probably the biggest thing.
Right. So the compressor, the nice machine, and then there's an electric conveyor belt that puts the bagging, and then there's a machine that puts the bags on.
Yeah. no, nothing with public safety.
Well, yeah, see, the land use doesn't have any relevant detrimental effects that would have an impact, potential impact on public safety services, so I wouldn't say that's applicable. Next one.
Wastewater.
Because we're generating wastewater, and the wastewater that the treatment plant's accepting for this project will be just general cleaning wastewater, not part of the processing operation, but that could change.
Possibly, yeah, but we don't see it happening. In fact, we were talking to the lobster guy across the street. If he gets a high-pressure processor, we may rent it one day a week and do some processing in his facility.
Yeah. Are you washing the mussels in the facility?
No.
No. Just you bring them in and sort them to size, maybe?
They're already sorted. All they do is go through bags. We may have a small spray of fresh water, just basically
rinse them off,
sure, as they go in the conveyor belt, completely clean. But like I say, it will be really small, just pinholes of water dripping on as they go up through.
So the processing you do on the boat is with salt water.
Exactly.
So they come to the plant with some salt water or a brine unit.
Yeah, they're in the totes, and the totes are drained, and then there would be about 2 or 3 inches of ice on them to keep them cold. And so then we would remove the ice and then dump the whole thing and then spray a little bit of water on them as they're coming through. And at the end, we'd go off washing down the area.
How long does it take for the product to reach their end user? About, I just wondered if it's just...
Well,
to Boston.
Within a day, typically. And then if they're shipped like down to Boston, if we have 6,000 pounds or more, we may be able to do a truck early in the morning and get down to Boston the next day. So they have a shelf life of about 10 to 14 days. So usually you like to get them to their end location within 3 to 4 days. But we've had restaurants in Belfast, for instance, that have had them for 14 days and they're still in good shape. But that's because we do all the processing out on the water when they're the strongest.
Yeah.
And then after they go through, well, there's like 17 hydraulic motors that run the whole processing line. In the end, they go in these big tanks for an hour and we pump water in there and they recover. And we call them purging. They get rid of the mud. Then we drain them, and then we put the ice on them. So they're all clean, washed, and chilled.
So you have a relatively good size boat that you're doing this with, then?
Yeah, I mean, this boat's 60 by 24, and then the other guy that works with me has a 70-foot boat. So we have a capacity of doing, like, 30 tons. I was hoping that if I could do 5 tons, I'd be happy. Apparently, we're doing 1 ton, and we're finding that we're just break even. So we've had to expand in order to be profitable. Because you got your same crew of 3 people out there, and if you can bring in 5 times as many, then that's...
Sounds like a lot of work.
Is your production, say, better here than it is in Southern Maine?
Well, we developed this... I got this patent on the submersible mussel raft. And after like 5 years of R&D, we found that the yields were 3 times as high because like weather like today or with a storm coming through, what happens is when the raft is down 10 feet below the surface, it's like this regardless of what's happening up there. And you've got these 6 buoys that have 2 cubic meters of flotation that have the excess buoyancy. And if I need to add air to the raft, I have hoses going up the surface and I can bring it back up and the buoys will go up. But the yield went from 100 pounds of rope to 300 pounds of rope. And all of a sudden it was like, well, how can I deal with that? If I'm only bringing in a ton a day, now I got to be able to up it. And then the question was, well, how can I bag all those on the boat? I don't have enough time to put them in 10-pound bags. And then I need a plant. So it came from growing them to a high yield, and then it came to had to process the final step on shore. But For us, at least, as I was saying before, we were doing it all ourselves. So we were going out, getting a ton, then doing the distribution, doing all the sales the next day. And we couldn't be out on the water growing mussels because we were doing it all. Mm-hmm. So now what we want to do is go out and bring 5 tons bring it to the plant, and then the people in Bucksport do all the packing and all the distribution, and I go back out and I get more mussels. That way, it makes it profitable. That's a big difference. So, you know, the people in Southern Maine are doing okay, but I think the submersible raft is really the way to go, because if this nine raft thing does what we think it will, and we'll know in 3 or 4 years, then you could put 10 of these nine raft farms out. You could put them in Belfast Bay, you could put them anywhere, and you'll have a million pounds of your farm. So,
very good.
Somebody's got to do it, yeah.
That's right. It's life's pitch.
I've been doing it for 37 years, so it's time to make the move.
Yeah. So we can get back to this. Number five.
Yep, we'll take that up.
Dumpster. Yeah.
Six.
No, not really. Yep.
Specific use standards?
There's only one specific use standard in the land use ordinance that's applicable, and that's parking. And for production land uses, the parking requirements are one space per employee and 200 square feet, one per 200 square feet of floor area used for retail sales. And there's no retail sales here, so that's not applicable. So the parking requirement is one space per employee, and you're going to have how many employees?
Three.
And how many parking spaces are shown on the site plan?
Four. Mm-hmm.
Actually, it could be five.
Yep, four. With the first one being a handicap space.
So that's it.
Okay.
The next one deals with dimensional standards, and the dimensional standards that are applicable here are setbacks from property lines. In this district, it's 10 feet minimum. This site plan shows this meeting that standard, and then some, I think. That applies to the parking lot as well. And building height, which is 50 feet, I believe. What's the height of this building?
What's that?
20, not counting the roof.
12. When the one is 12,
the actually, I'm wrong about the height limit. It's 75 feet in the C3 district.
So that's not an issue. So, no.
The building's under 75 feet.
Yeah, I think it's
22 with feet.
Yeah.
24
feet.
Yeah. It's well under 75. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah. About 24, like 3.5. Or,
So that's it for your standard.
Okay.
Yep.
So now we go back through and
do your findings.
Do the findings. Great. So, and we didn't ask back, you know, as we went through, but we don't think this site visit needed in any.
You can make that determination for the entire application, you know, rather than doing it individually for each standard.
Okay. So, under environment standards, what do we find?
You might want to first, Mr. Chairman, determine if you do want to conduct a site visit before you do your findings.
I make a motion we don't do a site visit.
Second.
All in favor?
All right, now you're in a position to do your findings.
What do we find?
You're going to go back to page 2.
Correct. Under environment standards.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, what have we found?
So we've got, proposed land use will have no impact on the environment that's contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
That's a motion?
That's a motion.
We'll call for a second.
Anyone want to second that?
I will.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? So for special area standards.
You didn't find any of those to be applicable, so there's no need to conduct a findings then.
Okay. Local area standards. What have we found there?
Well, basically, we said that we were looking at 1, 4, 5, 6, and all of them are being mitigated by the information that
in the packet provided
was supplied to us by the applicant. So I propose to move that the proposed land use will have no impact on local areas that is contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
Can we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Public safety standards?
I think we only found that 4 and 5 were applicable in this case, and again, they've indicated proper mitigation of any issues that might arise with their plan. The only question is the wet runoff fall on the natural land.
Except brought up earlier something about a grease trap. You may want to pursue whether that's actually required.
Right, yeah, well, I certainly will talk to Dave Mishu about that and find out why he's making that requirement as part of the sewer permit. I'm assuming he's thinking that there's going to be some grease oils or fats coming out of the drain. But
no, there's no cooking here or anything.
Unless, is that something they require of any commercial or manufacturing?
Typically, it would be required only if you're generating grease oils or fats.
So I don't think the I don't think the fact that it's listed on the permit for a grease trap is going to cause us a problem here. But
in either case, either way,
correct,
with or without,
with or without,
right. Okay. The waste lines have to meet plumbing codes anyway, so. Okay.
I believe everything's kind of covered in the plans. So what have we found?
Well, I move the number 2 again, that the proposed land use will have no impact on public safety as contrary to the purposes of this ordinance.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Specific use standards.
We determined if there was enough parking and that we met.
So our finding is?
The proposed land use has met all applicable specific use standards in this ordinance.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Dimensional standard?
Guess we determined that they met setback and height.
No, there are no applicable dimension objectives. Those aren't required.
Well, there are.
Well, they're setbacks, and they've met the setbacks
and building height.
Building height, and they're under the building height. So.
The proposed land use has met all applicable dimension standards in this ordinance.
Second.
Thank you.
That was pretty clear.
Move it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
So that concludes your review, and because the board has made a positive finding for all applicable standards, that means your application has been approved.
Now, go forth and preach that this planning board is friendly and receptive to well-prepared submissions.
Well, this is, you know, I have to thank Bill for doing an outstanding job on the site.
So we'll have to sit down and talk about this, like the next phase, building permit, forming permit.
Yes.
You've applied for the entrance permit already, so we'll get that place for you as well.
So it's up in there.
So whenever you're ready to do that, come up.
And I will, before you start the...
And you got the mask.
Yeah, they use that as a...
Company I work for, they brought out.
Really?
Did they give you a raise? Take away your job?
You said, no, but
my new job started yesterday.
So new company?
Check yourself, different name.
No, it's not the name. We're part of D-Supply, you're on the stock market.
So we're going to continue on administrative business.
It's on that form.
Rich. Rich. We're going to continue with our meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck.
So the for admin, there's really nothing for the planning board necessarily. I give you an update on some ordinance work that's underway through the ordinance committee. It's nothing that this board needs to review, but we're in the process of updating Chapter 5 of the Town Code, which is a building standards and property maintenance ordinance. And the result of the update is it's a complete overhaul of the chapter, and it breaks down the chapter into... Chapter 5 will become just the building ordinance. The property maintenance part of that chapter is going to be moved to another chapter, a newly created chapter in the Town Code, Chapter 13. And they're going to take that up tomorrow night if there is a meeting, if it's not canceled due to the storm. Excuse me, Thursday night. Thursday night, not tomorrow night.
Probably canceled.
Well, maybe. Not looking good right now, but we'll see.
You also referred to that... the hearing?
Contract zone, yes.
Yeah, you referred to that as going to be tomorrow night also.
Oh, I'm sorry, I meant Thursday night. Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yes, Thursday night, that will be at the council meeting at 7. The ordinance committee meets at 6. Or they're scheduled to meet at 6. And let's see what else.
Did we have a public hearing Thursday night at the town council on the... on the contract zone, or yes. Will they just review it and have a public hearing another meeting?
Well, any ordinance that comes to the council, and this is an ordinance because it involves a change to the town zoning map, any ordinance requires two readings by the town council. They held their first reading at the last meeting, and then they scheduled a public hearing and second reading for March 8th. So they do their second reading, then they take public comments, and depending on what public testimony they get, they either go right ahead and act on the ordinance, or if there's a lot of concerns about the content, they might consider sending it back or taking a pause and reviewing it further. If they did that, they would actually have to come back and do a third reading. If they want to make changes to it, they would do a third reading. And then make a decision at that point in time if it was appropriate to do so. So there's that, Chapter 5, property standards, and a new chapter. The council is also talking about and seriously considering changing the committee structure that they have now. Right now they have 9 committees, council committees. And the ordinance committee met and talked about that and has decided to try to reduce it down to 4 committees. So that's in the works. There's also an interest to adopt a food sovereignty ordinance. the Maine State Legislature adopted a law that allows some types of food businesses to be exempt from state oversight food regulations. If municipalities adopt a local ordinance that recognizes that exemption. So it applies to small-scale businesses like small farms and home-based food production businesses that sell their food directly to the consumer where the food is made. So in most cases, it would be at their home, whether it be a farm or a house where they make the food products. Right now, those types of businesses are subject to state licensing and oversight inspections. And mm-hmm. So there was an effort made a few years ago from, I think it was a Blue Hill farmer who wanted to sell his raw milk and was prohibited from doing so unless he met these strict state regulations. And so that's where that law came from. Cool. So we're working on that. And that will be probably added as another appendix to the town code.
If I may, they also, the young couple that got up and spoke at that meeting also stated that processed things from the farm, in other words, they could make yogurt and sell them.
Or cheese.
A number of different things that I would have thought would have kind of stayed under a lot more regulation. Process things from the farm. But for instance, I sell my eggs, but they're pretty hard to mess up an egg, you know. Set on it too long, I suppose. You know. But dairy products like making butter and things like that, I mean, they're standards that kind of have to be watched, you know.
But so it's kind of like self-governance. So if the town agrees to allow these businesses to become exempt from state regulations, they're pretty much governing themselves to make certain their products are safe for the consumers to use.
Right.
The law was initially adopted to define the direct producer-to-consumer transaction to be a face-to-face transaction, which means that it could take place anywhere. You make the product, take it anywhere, like a farmer's markets, for example, and you just, as long as you're selling, the producer is selling directly to the consumer.
Right.
That's how the law was originally worded, and it applied to any food product.
Hmm.
But this has been changed. They had to come back and amend it because the federal agencies threatened to, sue the state or whatever about the exemptions, that the exemptions would apply to meat and poultry, and they didn't want that. So so the end result is the law was amended to exclude producers of meat and poultry products from that exemption, the sovereignty exemption.
Yeah.
Another thing that was clarified was the definition of producer to consumer transaction. It now reads that the transaction has to take place where the food is made. So that rules out now taking your homemade bread and selling it at the farmer's market. You have to sell it at your home.
Okay.
So there's been some disagreement about that. There are people out there that think that the law could be interpreted to allow a municipality to include farmers markets or other events as places where you can have that producer to consumer transaction, but MMA attorneys say no, that's not how the law should be interpreted, so we're not going to interpret it that way in our food sovereignty ordinance.
I sell my eggs door to door. I have to sell them at my farm now under these new regulations.
I don't know if an egg is processed any more than a carrot.
Yeah, I'm not sure, Jim, if an egg would be considered a food. Eggs are food, obviously.
Hmm.
I'm not sure how to answer that question. I'll look into it.
It isn't an egg that could be infected until it's broken open.
Yeah, there's that risk. If you have a slight crack in an egg, it could allow bacteria to find its way in.
Yeah, my consumers don't want the cracked ones anyway. Yeah, they eat them themselves.
Sometimes you buy a dozen eggs at the store and find this one, you pull one out, it's got a crack you didn't see.
Yeah.
So what do you do with it? You throw it out? Or?
I don't know. Salmonella doesn't sound like anything I'd like to bulk with.
Yeah, I'd probably still have help.
But I'll look into that question, Jim, and let you know. Thanks. About being able to take your eggs door to door.
If I can, I'm going to tell the girls upstairs you said so. You can deal with that. Yeah.
But to sell eggs, I don't think, does that require a state food license?
Not that I ever knew of.
But yeah. It may not. So that's what's in the works. We're also trying to get the schedule of fees finalized. So, because when we amend the ordinances, and we'll eventually do it to the land use ordinance, so we're taking the fees out of the ordinances and putting them in the schedule of fees, so that if a change is necessary to a fee, it can be done without having to go through the ordinance process, ordinance amendment. So we're doing that to Chapter 5 right now that has fees from building permits. We're taking those out and referring the reader of the ordinance to Chapter 5 to determine what the fees are. I mean, to the schedule of fees to determine what the fees are. But we've got to get that. The council hasn't acted yet on approving the schedule of fees, so we've got to get that done. We're also trying to... We started to amend the solid waste flow control ordinance. Actually, we did amend the ordinance. That's been overhauled, was updated. But we took out of the ordinance, we took out the transfer station rules and the fees and put them in a separate document that would eventually find its way into the new town's manual of rules and policies. That was something new that the charter was amended last year to recognize that we now have a manual of rules and policies. So the transfer station rules, for example, would go in that manual, but the town has not yet approved the new transfer station rules or the new schedule of fees. They tabled it until, until the Fiberite facility is finished, up and running, and if any changes are necessary to deal with fees, they could be addressed before they adopted the fee. So that even though the flow control ordinance is new, we still are using the old transfer station rules that were in the old ordinance, and the old set of fees are still in effect and being used until they figure out what to do with the new proposed ones. That's the state of affairs in the Bucksport Town Code right now. There's still a lot more work to do the town code in terms of bringing things up to date. Some parts of the code have been touched for decades and are outdated and contain inaccurate information. So it's an ongoing process. Some of which will come back to you. The land use ordinance will be amended again in the not too distant future to deal with some other things that need to be taken up. As a matter of fact, I think when we do the food sovereignty ordinance, I think it's going to be, we're going to have to refer to it in the land use ordinance, because it's only going to pertain to home-based agriculture, which is essentially it's a small farm. It's not a small farm. It's a home that raises vegetables, fruits, or animals for their own consumption, and they may have excess that they can't consume or preserve or store that they can sell. That's called home-based agriculture. You're raising the stuff mainly for your own use, but if you have excess, it's okay to sell it. So the food sovereignty ordinance will apply to that type of operation, and also to home-based food production businesses, which are, again, small-scale. Home-based business, by its nature, is very small-scale. where you've got somebody who's got a place in their home or in the kitchen where they're baking muffins or bread or making jellies or jams that they want to sell. That also will be exempt under the food sovereignty law as long as they're selling those products at their home.
Do they get inspected at all?
Well, they were subject to state licensing, so theoretically there's supposed to be an inspector that comes by and checks out their facility. Yeah. So it's not going to apply to food businesses that have storefronts like the bakery we have here on Main Street. Any business that sells food here, even though they may make it there, which is the bakery, they make bread there. So that business is making some food product right there and selling it directly face to face to the consumers, but that will be exempt.
It won't be.
No. They were still subject to licensing by the state.
Is the Friars business anything that we're going to have to look at? Or?
That was a change of use, George, that I permitted. So,
is that in the flower shop or the flower? I didn't even know where it was.
The tobacco shop or the flower shop?
Isn't that where the tattoo place was?
Yeah, there was a tanning salon there. Yeah. I think there was a tattoo business there at one time, too.
Yeah, there was.
DJ.
Yeah. Oh, so it's on the riverside, then.
Yeah. And they are very close to opening. Their last step is to get their food license from the town council. Hopefully that will happen this Thursday. That's the last approval they'll need before they can open for business.
They've closed down their other place.
But
they're going to continue baking. So they have a kitchen in their home, and they're going to continue baking. But they will be exempt from licensing because they're bringing their baked goods from their home to the store. Yeah. So they'll have to get maintained. They have a license now. They just have to maintain it. But the
bread and booze.
Bread and broads, that's where the money is. Is that being recorded?
This, we are being recorded, yes.
Jim, you shouldn't talk like that.
Yeah, I'll try to control myself from here on in.
Anything else?
No.
Therefore,
move to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?